And now for the main message by Mr. Joe Horchek.
Thank you, Mr. Tannert. Good morning to everybody. Welcome to all of our friends out on the webcast out there. I know that we've got a group that are hunkered down in a bunker somewhere in the middle of California, at least a dozen of them watching the services today, and we got about five or six or seven others in California watching in. So hello to all of you guys. Come out and visit us. Join us here in Tucson. Just a quick statement about my mishap on December 8th, getting bucked off the horse. I had a rough go of it the first few days. Apparently, I spooked him when I took my windbreaker off, and that crunkly noise made it bulk. And he started to dash down a hill, and I jolted him around to try to turn him around. He started dashing up the hill, and I had to turn him around again. And that's the last thing I remember. I ended up on the ground bleeding profusely from the nose. And apparently I hit his head like right below my nose. Had it been an inch higher, I'd have just smashed my nose. Had it been an inch lower, I'd have lost all my teeth. But I landed on my left side, thankfully, because I had hip replacement on my right side about 8 years ago. And had I landed on the right side, that could have been a disaster. We were way out in Benson, so it's a two-hour ride to get back to the house. We got back home trying to get things under control, and it just would not quit bleeding. Our neighbor's a nurse, so she said, go to ER. I went to ER. Long and short of it is, they finally got the nose to stop bleeding. They really didn't do anything for it. They just said, sit here, and they took all the plugs out that I had in my nostrils. They did three CT scans, though. They did one of the face, one of the brain, and one of the upper cervical, and they all came back negative. And as Mr. Wonderful back there told me, so you don't have a brain. I said, yeah, that explains a lot in my life. I've just learned to adapt without one. But thankfully, there were no broken bones, no contusions, no anything like that. But they said probably what happened is I burst almost every blood vessel in and around the nose area. This was all black and blue, and I couldn't even shave about the first week and a half. But it's still a little on the tender side, but my shoulder, my back, and my hip are all fine now. Still got signs of the bruising, but doing very well and getting around just fine. So I didn't practice what my sermon is about, is what the problem was. And you'll see what I mean in just a little bit. Well, it was sure nice to get a little bit of rain a week or so ago, too, with the cooler weather. So I've really been enjoying this. You know, every time after reading through the book of Proverbs in times past, I've always been reminded of one very important point, and it's just so blazing when you start reading in the book of Proverbs. It seems to happen almost every single time I read. To begin with today, I'd like you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. The subject I'm referring to today is a huge one. And I alluded to it the last time I spoke a couple, 3 weeks ago. It's probably a subject we'll probably never fully comprehend until Jesus Christ returns, and that is the subject of wisdom. I also found several interesting quotes on the subject of wisdom recently. Let me share with one of them with you as you turn to 1 Kings 3. This is an anonymous quote. Can't figure out who the individual was that made the quote, but it's a good one. He said, or she said, wisdom is the quality that keeps you from getting into situations where you need it. Let me read that again. Very appropriate. Wisdom is the quality that keeps you from getting into situations where you might need it. You need to think about that one for a bit to grasp its full meaning, but it's true. I'm sure many of us have heard or read something that is called the Serenity Prayer. You may even have a copy of it on the wall in your home. I remember my mother had one on her wall in her kitchen. Here's the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And one more quote on the subject from a Greek philosopher, Sophocles. Much wisdom often goes with fewer words. All of these are excellent quotes on the concept of developing and attaining wisdom in our lives. And we're going to see this to be true throughout the entirety of the sermon today. Let's Let's take a look here at 1 Kings 3 and gain a little bit of a biblical perspective on wisdom and what it can mean to a person's life. God, in a dream, had asked Solomon what he wanted God to give him as he was being made king of Israel in place of David. Listen to Solomon's words and God's responses to his words here in 1 Kings 3, beginning in verse 7. "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child." He was a young man. "I do not know how to go out or come in." This is a statement of humility, recognizing his position in life in relationship to what God was calling him to. Solomon shows humility as he responds to God's request, acknowledging his own weaknesses as a man, which we have a tendency to steer away from later on in life. Verse 8, "And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" This is pretty profound coming from this young man, Solomon. God said, "I'll give you anything. What do you want?" And he said he wanted an understanding heart and the ability to be able to determine good from evil so that he can help God's people. Then listen to God's response to Solomon's statement about what he wanted to serve as king. Verse 10, "The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked for this thing. Then God said to him, 'Because you have asked this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked for riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, because that's what you asked for. Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any be like you rise after you." That is a profound statement. God himself told Solomon, "I've given you so much wisdom and understanding that nobody before you ever had such a level, and nobody after you is ever going to have such a level. The only exclusion is Jesus Christ." Profound, profound, the wisdom of all time. Drop down to 1 Kings 4 now, maybe just the next page on your Bible. And let's look at what his wisdom did, this wisdom did, and how it took a liking to Solomon. 1 Kings 4, verse 29. "And God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart like the sand on the seashore." This is amazing what Solomon asked for and how God responded. God says, "You want wisdom, baby? I'm going to give you some wisdom. I'm going to give you understanding. I'm going to give you a magnanimous heart. I'm going to make you a good king." Thus Solomon's wisdom in verse 30 excelled the wisdom of all the men of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, which were considered to be wise people. Drop down to verse 34. "And men of all nations from all the kings of the earth who heard of his wisdom came to hear the wisdom of Solomon." Think about the profoundness of this. Kings from other countries around the globe had heard by word of mouth about this wisdom of Solomon, and they wanted to come and just sit and listen to him talk because they knew wisdom was going to come out of his mouth. They were seeking what he had to offer. Wisdom had a pretty profound, powerful impact on the life of Solomon and the people that he served and the people he was around. So what is this thing called wisdom? How does one gain in wisdom? And is it worth the effort? Let's now flip over to the book of Proverbs. Go back to where I said this subject came to front with me. Proverbs chapter 1, to be exact. Proverbs 1. I know most of us have probably read these passages many, many times. But hopefully, today, they can have a little more of an impact on our minds. When you look up the word wisdom in the dictionary, you'll find something like this definition. Wisdom is the accumulation of knowledge, insight, and judgment, with discernment and good sense on when and how to use them. It's not just knowing. It's knowing when and how to use something. Solomon knew and understood all of this, and he shared it with us here in the book of Proverbs. The Bible earlier told us that Solomon wrote 3,000 Proverbs. We don't have all of them here in the Bible. Let's take a peek at a few of them today about wisdom that Solomon profoundly stated. Let's pick it up here, Proverbs 1 and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. So we know who it's coming from. He then tells why he wrote the Proverbs. Verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. That's what the book of Proverbs was written for. And that's why Solomon initiated it. He was going to try to pass this along to his sons so that they could grow in this knowledge and wisdom and understanding and being able to live a life that was guided and directed by wisdom. That sounds a lot like the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition that we just read. Solomon refers to wisdom 47 times in the book of Proverbs alone, and another 26 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. It was important. Drop down to verse 20 of chapter 1 of Proverbs. Wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses, at the openings of the gates in the city. She speaks her words. Solomon knew how absolutely important wisdom was to make strides in life, especially as a Christian. He said, wisdom is just screaming in the streets for you to listen, to try to get our attention, to try to see and know and understand what it can mean and do in our lives. Put a marker here in Proverbs, and let's flip over now to James 1. James chapter 1, all the way back to the book, back of the Bible. James chapter 1. As Solomon put it, wisdom is screaming at us to take her into our lives. He knew it was a crucial aspect of being able to gain more of it in our own lives. For the rest of the sermon, let's look at several spiritual requirements for growing in wisdom in our lives. Here in James 1, we see James basically referring back to 1 Kings 3, where Solomon asked God for wisdom to manage his people. Let's pick it up here in James 1, and we'll begin in verse 5. Here we will see the first of several spiritual requirements for gaining wisdom in our life, which is faith. Verse 5 of James 1. If any of you lacks wisdom, it doesn't get any more specific than this. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Now you need to stop right here, as I have suggested many times in my preaching, and say, what did I just read? I read a promise by God through James. Let's read it again and see what it says. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. We've got to believe that. And we know we have to believe it because of the next couple of verses. Verse 6. But let him ask in faith with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. In other words, no direction. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord, let alone wisdom. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Spiritual requirements for gaining wisdom includes faith. We have got to believe that God is going to do what he said he is going to do. When we read promises like we just read in James 1, verse 5, we have to believe that. Because if we don't believe it, and we go to God and ask for faith, what do you think God's going to do? He's not going to give it to us. Because we're lacking one of the spiritual requirements to really develop faith in our lives, or wisdom in our lives, faith. If we lack faith, what did Jesus Christ say to do? Ask for it, seek it. He wants us to have faith. He wants us to have the strength and the vitality of being able to know and trust and believe in God. Because without that, we're this doubting mind driven to and fro by the winds. So we see faith plays a huge role in gaining wisdom. Let's go back to the book of Proverbs now. Flip all the way back where you had your hand marked. This time we're going to start in Proverbs 2. Sometimes we have to be able to admit our weaknesses, as Solomon did in his dialogue with God, to obtain more wisdom in our lives. Be honest with ourselves. When we get on our knees before God, as we can read in the New Testament many times by Paul, God knows what our heart is. And if we come to him from a position of strength and power and authority and know-it-all, God knows we're not there. God wants us to come to him and say, Father, you know, I'm weak here. I don't know what to do. I'm afraid. I had a real dear friend of mine just send me a message just this last week. And they said, with all the stuff going on with COVID and all the craziness going on in the world and all the craziness going on with the elections and all the uncertainty and all the dialogue that's been taking place about where this country is ultimately going, they said, you know what? I'm ashamed to admit this. I'm losing faith. I'm getting more and more fearful as I'm watching things happen. I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle all this. That's when we need to go to God more frequently and say, I need my faith strengthened. I need my belief system strengthened between me and you and Jesus Christ. Do you not think that God and Christ don't want you to have faith, don't want us to have faith? They absolutely do, because they know it's crucial. Crucial for each and every one of us to make progress in our lives. There's a quote that I found in Reader's Digest from back March of 1993 on page 128. Here's the quote. A colleague of mine at NASA was assigned to prepare a presentation on lessons learned from our bad experiences with the Hubble telescope. On his chart at the briefing, lesson number one read, in naming your mission, never use a word that rhymes with trouble. A funny thing, yes, but at the same time, you know, maybe there's some truth to it. And Theodore Levitt, a professor at Harvard Business School, wrote this. Experience comes from what we have done. Wisdom comes from what we have done badly. And I might add, learning from it. Making mistakes. And when I was a manager of companies and divisions and whatever through my history of life, one of the things I always told my employees, never be afraid of making a mistake. Give it your best shot. Plan it the best you possibly can, like we heard in the sermonette. Move forward positively. And if you happen to make a mistake, maybe it's a good mistake that you can learn from. I remember when Thomas Edison was trying to develop the light bulb. He failed, I don't know, I'm going to make a number up, 1,001 times. And somebody said, don't you feel like a failure? He says, no, I know 1,001 ways, one ways not to do it. He learned from it. And that's one of the things that we sometimes have a difficulty as humans. We make mistakes and we feel like failures. And we beat ourselves up with it. Here in Proverbs 2, we see Solomon once again showing us the next spiritual requirement to grow in wisdom. He uses a term which is translated uprightness or righteousness or integrity. So let's begin here in Proverbs 2 and verse 6. For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly or with integrity. He guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and judgments, equity, and every good path. We could read over that and start totally miss the point. So if we have faith and we are walking with integrity before God, we are on our way to growing in wisdom. So you need to ask yourself, as I've needed to ask myself through my years, where do I stand in living my life with integrity? Only you can answer that question. And be brutally honest with yourself. And if you have a hard time with this, I'm going to give you a challenge that I challenge you, but I warn you. This is probably one of the prayers you will request that God will answer. If you have a tough time not knowing where you stand with integrity in your life, get on your knees, go before God, and ask God to show you your heart. What is my heart really like? Not what do I think it's like, not what do other people think it's like, but what do you think it is like? But be prepared. You're probably not going to like the response. But it helps us, brethren, to see where we need to change. And if we can make those changes, we can walk more with integrity and uprightness before God. And that's what we want to do, especially if we want to gain more wisdom in our lives. All right, let's go now to Proverbs 9. Here in Proverbs 9, let's look at yet another spiritual requirement for growing in wisdom. This is a principle that applies to more than wisdom, as we are going to see. We will read in Proverbs 9 something that was stated back in Proverbs 1, which we did not read a little bit earlier. Okay, let's look at Proverbs 9 and begin in verse 10. Proverbs 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. So we see here that reverence and a healthy respect for God is also a spiritual requirement. Required for growing in wisdom. We can't have an unhealthy respect for God, or disrespect him, or doubt him, or challenge him, again, as we heard in the sermonette, or not revere him. And I don't know what your life was like, but my father and I didn't have a great relationship. And going to God as my father was foreign to me at first in my life, because I couldn't visualize what a good father would be like. And that's hard when you don't have that relationship coming from your own background. But God said, come to me, draw close to me, do the things that I'm asking you to do, and I will draw close to you. This is another thing that we can go to God and say, God, help me understand what it means for you to be my father. In a healthy, strong, vibrant, energetic way, so that we can have the faith. So that we can walk with integrity, because we want to please our Father. I mean, there's no greater experience in life as a parent than you have your children want to please you. It's like the epitome of life. God is the same way. He wants us to please him, to have a reverence for him and a healthy respect for him. This is also a spiritual requirement for gaining understanding in our lives, gaining wisdom. A similar statement to this is made back in Proverbs 1. Let's go back there and read it, since we're already up front here. Proverbs 1, and the fear of the Lord is also used and wisdom mentioned, but it's also tied to knowledge. Proverbs 1, and I believe we heard this in a sermon or sermonette recently. Proverbs 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So we see this, the fear of God, we heard it's a respect for God, and at times it is a fear of him, the fear of knowing that if we go off track, there's going to be a consequence to pain. Not that God's going to invoke it. It's just like a natural course of events. You jump off a cliff, you're going to hit the ground hard. You ride a horse, startle the horse, you're going to pay the price. It's just a natural course of events. All right, let's go to Job 28 next. Job 28. And we'll look at yet another spiritual requirement. Job 28. Job, in all of his sufferings, never really lost sight of this really important point. And that's one of the things that I found fascinating when I finally got to the point where I could read Job and sort of understand it. There's a lot of convoluted meaning and dialogue and things going on there. He knew, unlike his wife, apparently, that he couldn't ever lose respect and honor for God. That was down in his core. Remember his wife said, curse God and move on? Curse God and die? No respect there. Here in Job 28, we'll see Job make a very similar comment to what we just read in Proverbs 9. Let's begin reading here in Job 28 and verse 27. Job 28, verse 27. Then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. Job knew that he could never lose this respect for God, this honor of God. And he knew that if he was going to have wisdom, this was going to be tied to this relationship that he had with God the Father. And he said, to depart from evil is understanding. What does that say to you? What does that mean to you? Well, it means that when we know what is right and wrong, if we know something's wrong, even though it might be borderline wrong, and I can't tell you how many times I've counseled people in the decades that have been in the ministry where people just want to walk right on the edge of society. They're not going to jump in, but they like walking right on that edge. Well, what happens when you walk on along an edge long enough? Sooner or later, you're going to fall one way or the other. And if you're wanting to be close to the world, and there's multiple ways that this can be. One simple way is if you work in a work environment and people like to tell dirty jokes. Do you sit and listen to them? Do you laugh at them? Or you just casually excuse yourself? Or foul language? Or just you can name multiple things in society in which we live. And Job knew he had to stay away from all of that, no matter what happened. So we see the third spiritual requirement from growing wisdom is his reverence and respect for God, which is the word that is translated fear, actually means many of the times. Let's turn back to Proverbs once again. Proverbs 11 this time. Proverbs 11. When we first started today, we saw how Solomon responded to God when God asked him what he could give him to become the new king. Solomon's approach was one of humility. As I pointed out when I read 1 Kings 3 earlier, this was the focus of a sermon we've heard in the past. And we saw how a humble attitude goes a long way with God. If we're humbly accepting and admitting and acknowledging our weaknesses, I think this is harder for men to do, but I'm not saying it excludes women. It's tough for everybody to do. To be honest, brutally honest with ourselves about what our weaknesses are. Because our weaknesses many times are the things that lead us into sin. Solomon knew that. Here in Proverbs 11, we'll see this point being made by Solomon when it comes to wisdom. We'll also see that he ties two other points together here in Proverbs 11. Let's begin in Proverbs 11 and verse 2. Proverbs 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. Again, he's tying it back to that first relationship that he had with God when God asked, what do you want me to give you? The integrity of the upright will guide them. but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. So we see things now that are strengthening our ability to gain in wisdom. Uprightness, again, he's mentioning. But he's also talking about perversity of the unfaithful will destroy those things. So if we got something that we're doing in our lives, something that we're thinking in our lives, something that we're living our lives, interacting our lives, that is not correct. And you know what those things are. I mean, some of them are so obvious. But we've done them for so long, we've grown into it for such a long period of time, they just become second nature to us, and we don't think anything of it anymore. I mean, if you think about it, something like cheating on your taxes. Oh, yeah, the government's always taking my money here and taking my money. They don't deserve any of this money. I'll just put down whatever I need to put down so I don't have to pay anything. You know, you do things like that once, and it bothers your conscience. Do it twice, and it bothers your conscience a little less. Do it three times, less. Next thing you know, it's second nature. And if you start cheating in one area, what happens? You start cheating in other areas because you don't see anything really that wrong with it. Especially look at, compare myself to the rest of the world, I'm an angel. And we justify our behavior because we compare ourselves with really perverse people. So he's talking about, we see humility and uprightness and integrity are all tied together. And if you stop and think about it, they do tie together in our lives. Flip over a couple pages now to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. Here in Proverbs 15, we'll see Solomon again tying two of the spiritual requirements of growing in wisdom together again. Excuse me, again, pointing out the value and the importance of them. Solomon was able to tie all of this together, I believe, because he was blessed with wisdom from God. So Solomon can see all these little intricacies of life that all of us experience and all of us live with, and he can show us how it all ties together if we really want to grow in wisdom. We'll just read one verse here in Proverbs 15, verse 33. The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. Again, tying these key ingredients together, fearing of the Lord and humility work hand in hand. And if you stop and think about it, the more reverence we have for God, the more humility we'll have because we'll realize we don't come close to God. We don't come close to Jesus Christ. We don't hold a candle. Not even in the same ballpark, so to speak. And when we realize that and accept that for what we are, and we realize the strengths that we have, the abilities that we have, the intuitiveness that we have, the wisdom that we have, the integrity that they have is all what comes from God. And God has told us, Paul told us back in Corinthians, you know, God didn't call the wise of the world. He called the bottom of the barrel. Welcome to the bottom of the barrel. But he doesn't expect us to stay there. And he said, I do that so that when I give you my Holy Spirit, you're going to become like the cream of the crop. And everybody's going to wonder, well, how in the world did he or she become like that? And when we realize that and recognize that, it keeps us in a state of humility. Okay, we have two to go. Let's go back to Proverbs 9. Proverbs 9 and look at the next spiritual requirement for growing in wisdom. There was a story told about the automaker Henry Ford way back when. Let me share that with you here. Henry Ford asked electrical genius Charlie Steinmetz to build the generators for his manufacturing facility. One day the generators ground to a halt and the repairman couldn't figure out how to solve the problem. So Ford called Steinmetz, who tinkered with the machines for a few hours and then threw the switch. The generators whirred back to life. Ford afterward got a bill for $10,000 from Steinmetz. This is back in the 30s or 40s. Flabbergasted, the rather tight-fisted car maker inquired why the bill was so high. Steinmetz simply replied, for tinkering with the generators, $10. For knowing where to tinker, $9,990. Ford paid the bill. He was probably ready to be taught where to tinker as well. Having a teachable spirit is also a spiritual requirement for growing in wisdom, as we're going to see. And we'll see that here in Proverbs 9. We'll begin right before where we last read in Proverbs 9. Let's read here in Proverbs 9, verse 9. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will still be wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. Having that teachable spirit is crucially important. Again, I can't tell you how many times I've counseled with people through the decades I've been in the ministry, where people basically get to the point where they feel like they know it all. Now, they will never really say that. But if you ask them why they don't go to Bible studies, or why they don't do this, or why they don't do that, they say, well, you know, I've read that stuff 100 times. I already know what it says. That is a very, very dangerous position to allow yourself to grow into, to feel like you know it all. Or you feel like, I've read this enough. I don't need to keep reading this over and over and over again. I remember years gone by, I felt this way myself going to the Feast of Tabernacles or going to the Day of Atonement and reading out of Numbers and Leviticus. Like, oh, my stomach's growling, my head's hurting. Why do I have to keep reading? I read this last year. I read it the year before. But you know what? Every time you read through stuff like this, like I mentioned the last time I spoke, every time I read through the Ten Commandments, all of a sudden I see something I never saw before. Like the Bible tells us, here a little, there a little. And it's not always going to come to us all at once. So we need to maintain the spiritual, teachable mind. I and other speakers have seen it in people's faces when we preach to an audience. You can just tell by people looking at you. They're tuned out. They're not paying attention. I mean, I've literally had situations where individuals in the audience would just sit there and not even look at me. Not turn to a scripture, just sit there, I don't know, read the magazine, read the newspaper. I don't know what they were doing in their lap. That's a really, really tragic position to be in, and it's a very dangerous spiritual position to be in, to think we don't need to learn anymore. Turn back now to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15, on the heels of my last comment about being tuned out, this is a perfect scripture for that, as you will see. The tragedy of not being teachable, which may include a course correction from time to time. And we need to realize that. As we progress through life, sometimes our train track starts wavering a little bit one way or the other. And God lets it go for a while, and he lets it go for a little while. Then he might see an attitude start to happen because we've gone a little bit off track. And I'm not talking major stuff. I'm talking minor stuff that just it's more and more off track. The next thing you know, boom, 2x4 between the eyes, horse head to your lip. God gets your attention one way or another. He knows how to get your attention. And he wants us to look at stuff like that and say, okay, I don't believe in coincidences kind of thing. What was the lesson that needed to be learned here? Losing out on wisdom is one thing that's going to happen when we're not teachable. And that's not a good thing. We may continue to struggle over and over again with one thing and then another and never know why. Don't raise your hand, but have you ever felt like that in your life? It's like, I just keep dealing with this, and it just never gets better. Well, but there might be a cause and reaction thing here taking place. Lack of wisdom creates many life-altering problems. Let's begin here in Proverbs 15 and verse 31. Proverbs 15, verse 31. The ear that hears the rebukes of life, correction, will abide among the wise. He who disdains instruction despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. Sometimes that can be one of the most painful things in life to deal with, can't it? Being corrected. I love the way the New Living Translation translates this passage of Scripture. Let me reread from the New Living Translation, Proverbs 15, 31 and 32. Listen to this. If you listen to constructive criticism, you will be at home among the wise. If you reject discipline, you only harm yourself, but if you listen to correction, you grow in understanding. And it's true. I mean, God tells us, if I love you, I'm going to correct you. Just like any loving parent will correct their children. Why? So they can be mean to their kids? No, so they can help them prevent damage in their lives somewhere else. That's the whole purpose behind it. God knows what we don't, especially about us. And God will, on occasion, give us a course correction. And again, like I said earlier, sometimes those can be some of the most painful things of life to deal with. Let's go to one last scripture on this point, Proverbs 19, just a few pages over. God, through Solomon, has shown us today that obtaining wisdom is one of the best beneficial things we can gain as a Christian. Very beneficial. It affects every aspect of our lives. Our families, our jobs, our schooling, our friendships, as well as our personal well-being. And in this crazy and aberrant COVID year of 2020, we need all this more than ever before. If this is just the tip of the iceberg for what's going to happen in this country, which I am inclined to believe it is, it may not be the exact tip of the exact iceberg. But as I mentioned months ago, I believe this is a preconditioning of the human spirit and the human mind so that we can be manipulated any way a force of power wants to push us. And this has been disconcerting. I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, it's been somewhat anxiety creating, some maybe even depressing at times, not being sure what's going to happen next. So look at Proverbs 19. We'll see it even affects us later in life, not having wisdom and understanding. Proverbs 19, verse 20. Listen to counsel and receive instruction, that you may be wise in your latter days. There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand. We might have desires or plans or things that we're thinking we're going to do or accomplish or go and see. We may or may not be able to do that. I think we'll be able to do those things and accomplish those things and achieve those things, whatever we have in our hearts, so long as it doesn't conflict with what God has in plan for us, where he wants us ultimately to end up in our Christian walk. So we see that being teachable is a key element in this spiritual requirements for growing in wisdom. We're down to my last requirement for the day. Back to Proverbs 8. Proverbs chapter 8. I made it easy on you today for flipping through the Bible, didn't I? three different books, and that's it. I haven't presented these in any special order, nor is this discussion, in my opinion, exhaustive. There's plenty more that you could discover and search out if you want to. But I think it gives us a basic to start from to get ourselves going on the right track to gaining more wisdom in our lives. This passage in Proverbs 8 pretty much sums up what we've been talking about all day long here today, and the power and the need for wisdom. The last spiritual point of requirements for growing in wisdom is diligence that we're going to read about in just a second. But before that, let me share another story with you. This is a story about a proud man who came to Socrates, asking Socrates for wisdom and knowledge. He walked up to the muscular philosopher and said, "Oh, great Socrates, I come to you for wisdom and knowledge." Socrates recognized a pompous numbskull when he saw one. He led the young man through the streets to the sea and chest deep into the water. Then he asked, "What do you want?" "Wisdom and knowledge, O wise Socrates," said the young man with a smile. Socrates put his strong hands on the man's shoulders and pushed him under the water. 30 seconds later, Socrates led him up. Socrates asked, "What do you want?" He asked again. "Wisdom and knowledge," the young man sputtered, "O great wise Socrates." Socrates crunched him under the water again. 35 seconds, 40, 50, 60. Socrates finally led him up out of the water. The man came up out of the water gasping for air. Socrates asked him one more time, "What do you want, young man?" Between heavy breathing and heaving breaths, the fellow wheezed, "Wisdom and knowledge, O wise and wonderful." Before he could finish, Socrates jammed him under again for 50 seconds, 60 seconds, 70 seconds. The guy was floundering around in the water and pulled him back up out of the air, out of the water. He said, "What do you want?" He said, "Air! I need air. I'm drowning." Socrates responded, "When you want wisdom and knowledge as you have just wanted air, then you will have the means to achieve it." We have to want it so bad that we will be diligent to do anything necessary to achieve it. I guess the challenge is, how much do we really want it? I've given you some steps toward it today. We can look here in Proverbs 8 and see Solomon's perspective on this as well. Let's begin in Proverbs 8 and verse 12, or see that this is wisdom actually speaking to us. Proverbs 8, verse 12. "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence," or good judgment, "and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate." These are not mincing words, folks. God's telling us he hates this kind of behavior. Keep in mind, this is wisdom speaking to us. Verse 14, "Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me, kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me, princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me." Our diligence in how we pursue wisdom is key to our success, along with the other steps that we've covered today. We have to want wisdom the same way that proud young man finally wanted air. Let's go to Proverbs 2, just a few pages back. Proverbs 2. We once again will see Solomon summarizing, if you will, the full power of wisdom in our lives. There's going to be a lot as we go through here and read in Proverbs 2, beginning in verse 1. Proverbs 2, verse 1. "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding our part in these things, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures or air, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom from his mouth, come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and judgment and equity and every good path." That sort of sums up everything, doesn't it? A great way to live. Before we end today, I want to share something else with you on the subject that we sometimes forget. I have a book in my library at home entitled "What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School." It's by Mark McCormick. It's an interesting discussion about quote-unquote street smarts. Similarly, Robert Fulghum wrote an editorial in the Kansas City Times. This pretty much summarizes what he wrote, and I quote, "Most of what I really need to know about how to live and what to do and how to be, I learned in kindergarten. Wisdom is not at the top of the graduate school mountain, but they're there in the sandbox at nursery school. These are the things I learned. Share everything. Play fair. Don't hit people. Put things back where you found them. Clean up your own mess. Don't take things that aren't yours. Say you're sorry when you hurt somebody. When you go out into the world, watch for traffic, hold hands, and stick together. Another writer, Hugh Duncan, wrote this about the editorial. This writer has captured part of what Jesus meant when he said, "Unless you become as little children, you will not enter the kingdom of God." So let's recap what we've learned about the spiritual requirements for gaining wisdom today, which just happens to be the title for the sermon. These aren't, as I mentioned earlier, exhaustive, but there are six ways that we can begin with. 1, having faith. 2, maintaining integrity and uprightness. 3, having reverence and a healthy respect for God. 4, having humility. 5, being teachable. And 6, maintaining diligence and pursuing wisdom. That, my friends, is wisdom. And 6 spiritual requirements that will get you there. Have a great Sabbath.